everyone. We have returned with Rewatchable, episode 118, The Legend of Korra Rewatch. We're up to book two, and we're doing the two-part episode Civil Wars, which is episodes 3 and 4 of book two of Legend of Korra. So we're going to go with this one straight through a synopsis of both of the episodes together, because they do really carry on one from the other, and then discuss the piece as a whole, I suppose, if we're going to get technical. If you'd like to contact us about the show, about any future episodes, past episodes, this episode, etc., you can join us on Twitter, which is re_watchable. You can email us at the podcast, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can always comment on this post on Hyperbole, our host site, or you can join our Tumblr, which is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. Now, as previously discussed, we're going to be taking a moment to introduce ourselves so that everyone knows whose voice is who, and I'll get started with that. I'm Natalie. I'm hosting this week, obviously. I'm a super fan, and just so you know, my desk is really, really, really messy right now because I dumped everything from my Comic-Con technological bits and pieces bag onto the desk, and I have not fixed it yet. So that's my great fact about myself right now. We'll go to Ariana next because we're not 100% sure if Donya's connection is going to last.
Hi, my name is Ariana, and I don't know. I'm trying to think of something. Oh, right now on my desk, there is a Disney Junior Doc McStuffins cup that my friend gave me. Aww. So this is so hard, guys.
You could just, like, say a sentence. We could, like, read a sentence from the nearest book or, like, Google something
okay,
on the internet.
Okay, yeah.
For future.
I'll do better next time.
Okay. And who else have we got?
Just me, Brittany.
Okay.
So, I'm Brittany, and I am currently sitting at my brother's desk, and he has a lot of stickers on his laptop that I'm looking at. One of them is Lumpy Space Princess, which I bought him at a convention 2 years ago. So, glad to see that he's making use of that.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'm glad we stuck with the desk theme.
Well, cool. I didn't want to go off the rails there.
All right, and then we may be joined by a fourth friend soon, but we are sort of negotiating who that is right now due to funny internet connections. In the meantime, while they sort that out, I'll read the synopsis for Civil Wars Part 1 and 2. In these chapters, Unalaq is most definitely and obviously evil, but it takes Korra way too long to realize that. Varric makes a plan to kidnap Unalaq, but Korra takes down Unalaq's kidnappers. There's a trial in which Senna is forgiven of all crimes, but Tonrak and the others are sentenced to life in jail. Later, Korra threatens to kill the judge who was paid off by Tonrak to run an unfair trial. Korra learns that Unalaq sabotaged Tonrak to gain control of the North so many years ago. Korra confronts her uncle, but this season's Slimebender reveals that he no longer needs Korra to unlock the Northern Spirit Portal. Varric hides in a bear suit and helps Korra, Marco, Asami, and Bolin to escape the Southern Water Tribe. As Unalaq and Co. are jailbroken, I think he means Tonrak and Co. Are jailbroken, and an irate Eska chases after Varric's ship to reclaim her recently engaged feeble turtle duck. Meanwhile. Sorry. My voice
is so great. That whale is so mean. Jeez.
I don't know why.
Stop eating up the other whales.
All right. Meanwhile, on. Stop. I don't know why. My mouth is just making the shape wrong. Okay. Meanwhile, on vacation Tenzin Island, Iki goes missing when her siblings pick on her. Tenzin feuds with Kaya and Bumi, and the latter two tell of the neglect they faced being Aang's non airbending kids. Tenzin comes to terms with his siblings when he has a heart-to-heart with Iki and some adorable baby air bison, a.k.a. the most important plot in the show. but, yes, so that's what we have got for the two-part episodes of Civil Wars. So we're going to talk, first of all, about Korra's story, because I guess that she is the main character and stuff. I guess. But, you know, we all know that we're waiting to get to the gang babies fighting, and that is clearly obviously where our hearts are lying right now. Okay, so the first point raised is basically why does Korra just allow Unalaq to kind of take control of the Southern Water Tribe? He seems to say, like, at first he's like, you know, I am your chief. Like, is he chief of the North and the South? Is there not a separate chief of the South? Like, why is this allowed,
basically? The South is a democracy.
Well, you'd think that, but he's like, I am your chief. It's like, are you? Like, you're the chief of all of the water tribes, even though that you don't live there? Like, what? Why would she allow that, basically?
She's dumb. I don't know.
That's your main answer? She's dumb?
She's dumb.
Okay. I mean, fair enough. It doesn't really... None of her trust of Unalaq makes a ton of sense to me, basically. It's, like, his excuse for, like, bringing the troops there. Because we see those battleships at the end of the last episode, and then, you know, Korra's like, why did you allow the troops to come? And Varric's like, oh, we need to protect the portal. Like, okay. All right, this isn't sus. So, I guess the most important part, or the most interesting part of this entire situation to me, is the focus on Varric and his plot to, I guess, kidnap Unalaq and get rid of him, or I don't know what they were planning to do with him, actually. Kill him, maybe? Who knows? But Varric gets a lot of screen time in this episodes, and I really love him, basically, for reasons that we will discuss. Basically, he's mental. He's just this great... He reminds me of Howard Stark, and I'm obsessed with it. Like, he's completely, like, arrogant and insane and, like, ridiculous, and he kind of doesn't realize how the rest of the world works around him because of what he's always been able to do, but I find him adorable and amazing. So, do either of you guys have any trust issues about Varric? Like, his loyalties, do you think that he's quote-unquote good or quote-unquote bad or, like, is he?
I mean, he's probably secretly evil, but I really like him. I think he's funny. So
yeah, I think he's
along for the ride right now.
He's very like. I don't think he has the attention span to plot too far in advance to actually take anyone down. So I think he's okay for now, and he's really funny. I love when
he might be like an accidental pawn.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
Because someone's going to offer him something that he wants, and he's like, yes, absolutely, that's what I want. It's going to get me my stinking fish out of this harbor.
Yeah.
Julie, write this down.
Yeah, how do we feel about Julie and their relationship, like, as the assistant and master, I suppose? Like, do you think that she's oppressed, or do you think that she's, like, a good, like, Pepper Potts-style assistant dealing with this idiot?
I was just thinking that she reminds me of Pepper Potts.
Yeah, well, there we go. Clearly it's a very, he really is a Stark-like character in that case. I quite like them, and the bear suit, I'd forgotten about this, like, until the episode started again, and I was just like, oh, God, yeah, he's in the bear. And I just, it's, I don't know, I find it hysterical. Yeah. So, yeah, did the bear suit skit throughout the two episodes, I suppose, of him being in the bear and then them taking the bear onto the boat. Did that drag for
just
you?
Take the bear.
No, yeah, they it did. Didn't they drag. It was so funny. Like, you know how, like, things in threes, like, make me laugh? Like I love when things are repeated, and this just did not let up. And then when they cut to that final scene of just the bear driving the boat, and he has the hat on, they put the hat on the bear. I was like, this is genius. I was like, he could have easily gotten out of that bear at any time. But no.
That was like the only part of Korra's story that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
Before we move on to the trial part, I just wanted to point out one thing that I found really odd about Korra and Unalaq, which was that, you know, when he brings the troops and is all like, oh, you know, don't let the South rise up against me. There'll be a civil war and you have to prevent that happening. And she says, oh, I don't know anything about how to stop fights. Usually I'm the one starting them. Like, did anyone see that as, like, a very bad Avatar trait? Like, isn't the Avatar literally meant to stop? That's,
like,
that's
to bring
point.
Yeah, like, did no one explain that clause to her, like, when she became never heard, like, oh, and by the way, your main purpose is to maintain peace. And she's like, oh, I'm just finding out about this now. I'm sorry.
I thought my job was serious. To, like, look cool and, fight.
And, like, just bend anytime I want.
Yeah. Pretty much. Oh, man. Yeah. So I just found that particular line very telling, basically, of Korra's drama. Basically everyone gets taken to trial. They identify the rebels. The kidnapping attempt happens. Obviously, Cora's father wasn't involved, and they have that rather nice scene between Cora and her mother, and, the mum telling her about their story, and then her running back and being like, "Dad, I'm so glad you weren't involved." But the parents still get arrested and brought to trial anyway, because, I don't know, reasons, because the system is corrupt. And basically, I suppose at this point, how quickly did you think that Cora was going to find out that Unalaq was dodgy, basically? Like, we find out by the end of these two episodes, obviously, that they know that Unalaq is dodgy. But were you kind of expecting that to be revealed, or did you think it was going to drag on and on as this, he's the villain, but Cora doesn't know about it for, like, more than just these episodes? Brittany, go on if you have a thought.
I was just thinking, like, I was hoping that this would end at the end of the first two episodes, that we would be like, okay, he's evil, the ships are here, and then this episode would pick up with her just not, like, going completely against Unalaq. But now, I was so frustrated.
She's so slow on the uptake.
I know, I was so frustrated these entire two episodes, and finally when she, like, had her meltdown and, like, went back to her dad, I'm like, okay, good, at least we're over that. But then, still, she was just so angry, and she's aggressive with, like, the judge, and she's just not getting it. And I felt like Mako. I'm like, listen, do you want me to say anything? Do I just let you carry on being your crazy self?
Oh, like, I know. Yeah. No wonder he wants to break up with her. I don't blame him.
It was just very frustrating.
Yeah.
He's like, I gave up Asami for this crazy.
Yeah, Asami's so stable. Like, Jesus. basically the trial, the mom gets set free. The dad... and everyone else gets sentenced to death, apparently. To death. Like, that's a thing that we're okay doing in Avatar World for children. Like, have we seen them have a death sentence before? Like, I know that in...
No, well, no, because they sent them to that island. The Fire Nation was, like, a dictatorship, so there was no trials. They couldn't be sentenced to death.
Yeah, but they put them all on that metal island that they put everyone on?
Oh, yeah.
That was an awesome prison break scene. Like, this was lame. Like, let's watch Avatar again.
Ain't Boiling Rock. But I suppose Aang did struggle through all of Atla with being like, do I have to kill the Fire Lord? Like, am I sitting, you know, that was kind of like, am I choosing to kill someone in cold blood? But we've never seen a trial scene where they're like, yeah, we kill people to death. In court in this universe, and then obviously they get Unalaq pretends to have, like, compassion, and he says actually they can have life in prison, and Cora finds out afterwards that obviously that this was all Unalaq's beautiful crafty plan.
I was right. He totally has been scamming his brother since the beginning.
Yeah. I thought that you would be excited by that. Does anyone have anything to say about Bolin and his terrible bribing?
It was awesome. It was so Bolin. It was a good moment because we were saying kind of before we started, like, I was barely paying attention during any of the Cora stuff. Like, I know it sounds bad, but I just wasn't invested enough to, like, really pay really close attention. But then when I heard Bolin, like, and he's like, yeah, I paid the guys, and it's just these two random people, and he's like, oh...
Right. I love, like, Asami's reaction to everything. Yeah. She's not even like,
I should have paid him. And she was just like, Asami's just trying to do business the whole time. She's like, where's Varric? We've got to make our deal. Like, she's trying to get on with her life, and she's caught up in these people's bullshit. And it's really, like, I feel sorry for her.
But I love how she doesn't even, like, look frustrated. She's just like, so typical. Like, of course you would do that, Bolin.
Yeah. And of course, the money came from, you know, the bear pooping money. Say, Julie, do the thing! And the bear poops money, which is just so ridiculous. Like, who sits in the writer's room and comes up with that? It's just so good. So Cora goes after the prison van, I guess. And the first thing about this that really surprised me is, like, that you can see her in the rearview mirror. I'm like, if I was doing this, I would have done it on the sly, if you know what I mean. I would have not made it known who was breaking them out, because her going up there as herself and being like, I'm the Avatar, you're going to let these people out or the polar bear dog's going to eat you, that sets a pretty bad, like, reputation going around about what the Avatar thinks of the legal system, yeah. Regardless of whether this is a corrupt system and that the guy admits that they were bribed and that, you know, Unalaq was evil and that he, all of the things that he did. It's still, like, if this had been a genuine legal system and Korra hadn't agreed with it and she went after them and was, like, threatening people and taking the law into her own hands, like, how much right does the Avatar have to take the law into her own hands, basically?
I was so shocked that she, like, had the judge's head in Naga's mouth. Like, and she's like, yeah. She's threatening death instead of, like, coming, like, taking any other route that she could possibly take.
I mean, she's dumb.
Well, yeah. I agree.
Yeah, these are just some bad moves. As I said, I would have done this in some sort of stealth mode, but never mind. He does, you know, under threat of Naga, admit that Unalaq rigged it all, basically. You know, he wanted that all to happen, and he sort of brought the sentences down to get Korra on his side. But we also learned that Ariana was right, that he did set up Tonrak being banished all those years ago, that he did set up the situation with the raiders and the forest and Tonrak in order to get his brother out of the way so he could take power. So, Ariana, how do you feel about that?
I mean, I was right, so I feel good about that. I feel like my intuition is justified.
That's good, good. So Unalaq, you know, when Korra confronts Unalaq, he says that he doesn't need Korra anymore to open the Northern Spirit porthole, which is interesting. So any theories on how he's going to do that or what he wants to do? Also, allegedly, this is going to allow people to use the spirit world as just like a TARDIS, like an escalator between north and south or something? Like, they can just go in
it's
one
like a
end
port key.
Out the other? Yeah, I suppose so. Like, do you think that that's a bit not nice? Like, should we be using the spirit world in that fashion?
Well, not only
I think
only
that's
is
dangerous.
It, yeah, and plus right now they're kind of pissed off, so I wouldn't use it as a
Also, you have, like, really mean spirits hanging out there.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The face snatcher and stuff, yeah. And you're just going to let people go there for, like, teleportation.
Yeah.
You know why that is hanging out in there? That girl that Zuko abandoned in an alley.
Oh my gosh, guys, when I went to Comic-Con, that's so funny. They brought her up, or the guy, Dante Bosco, brought her up. They asked him, I think, like, who was his favorite love interest, and he talked about her, but how he left her.
Oh, that's so great.
Oh, that's so good. It's so weird. I saw him on another panel about Asian Americans, and I think I said this, I can't remember if I said this on the show or if I just said this talking to Karen. He sounds so much like Zuko. Like, I think I must have. Like, all of the other voice actors that I've met, like, their natural speaking voice isn't necessarily the character. They can do many voices. His speaking voice is Zuko, and it's just mm-hmm. so weird. But never mind. Moving on.
His makes me uncomfortable. Like,
why? Because it's so Zuko.
It's so Zuko. Jack DeSena's, when he sounds a lot like Sokka in his normal speaking voice, but that doesn't make me uncomfortable. I don't know why. It was, like, endearing.
Oh, it's so weird.
It's like Sokka's alive.
Oh, no.
He's dead. Okay, anyway. Why would Unalaq want this porthole between North and South? Is it so he can, like, rule both countries, like, more quickly or something? So that he can pop between one and the other and be like, I'm your chief here. I don't just come down once a year and pretend that I'm in charge of you. I'm going to be here and be in charge of you all the time. Like, that's my only theory as to why he wants the porthole. I don't think he's actually super spiritual in touch with his religious side or anything. They basically then escape in a ship away from Unalaq and his troops after, you know, he knows that Korra is against him now. So earlier in the episode, you know, Bolin has been trying to break up with Eska because she's insane and he never really agreed to be in a relationship with her in the first place, I suppose. And Marco and him have a lot of discussions about ending relationships, and, you know, Bolin tries, and she, you know, decides that the only thing that will keep them together, you know, the only thing to bring the spark back for their relationship is marriage, and basically forces him into this, you know, water tribe betrothal outfit plus a betrothal necklace, which is like this emo skull thing that looks like it's from Hot Topic. And yeah, that was fun. So yeah, in general, and then she ends up chasing after the ship, being
that
like,
was
"Don't
such
leave
a great
me."
Chased yeah. after the She's ship. Like rocketing towards it, and I don't understand. Did you see how much power Eska had in the water? And Korra's like, "Oh, excuse me, I need to slip into like my spirit mode in order to move these ships." I'm like, Eska could have blown those away with her sheer rage, and you're like, hold on, going and getting in touch with my spirit side because I'm not strong enough. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I'm so yeah. mad how I easily mean, she uses her, she like decides to just use that.
But yeah, she's a woman that, scorned. Yeah. Obviously she has like extra power. I saw this funny thing online that said something like, Airbender Island wasn't an island until Tenzin broke up with Lin.
Oh my god.
That is great.
Jesus. So my thing about Eska and Bolin is like, why is she so upset? Like, do you think she like is just like, oh, someone has wronged me, or oh, I've lost control? Or do you think that she just like her outer shell is just like, you know, the only way that she knows to talk, but inside she actually does like Bolin and think that they have a good relationship? How do you feel about Eska and her craziness, basically? Any theories?
I mean, I no? like her.
No.
I think.
Did you say I don't care? Because I don't care.
No. I do care, actually, because they were the only part of the episodes where I was really, like, tuning in, because I love Bolin struggling a little bit. I think it gives a lot of comic relief to the episode, and I think that's her whole purpose. I don't think Eska, for now at least, I don't know, maybe she is a huge character and she's going to be around forever, but I just think that Eska is just providing that comic relief for the episode right now. And she's, yes, she's a woman scorned, but she's also, it's just a placeholder until something better comes along for Korra to deal with.
I just don't care about them anymore. Is it time for the kids yet?
I think so.
All right.
We're going to talk about the kids now.
Yes, yes. We're up to the point that it says, why are we only discussing Korra's storyline when obviously no one gives two shits about Korra's? Everyone knows we're only here for hashtag vacation tens. And I'm assuming Ariana put that comment in.
Yeah, because Mitch wasn't even going to talk about vacation tens.
Mitch
Tenzin.
Literally forgot to write up anything in the doc about vacation tens, which is really...
I don't know where his head is, because...
He has really different priorities. Like, for better or worse... And I'm saying this on the record, like, for better or worse, he has very different priorities about shows in general than I do. I've done many podcasts with Mitch, and the stuff that he chooses to focus on is, or the stuff that stands out to him is just not the same as the stuff that stands out to me, which is fine, but that's a fact. So apparently he doesn't care about Vacation Tenzin, so sucks to be him, because we obviously know where it's at.
Yeah. Oh, can I start off by just saying that I wrote that fan fiction for Rewatchable before watching these episodes, and as I'm watching it, I'm like, oh my gosh, I am a mind reader. I am in the zone with this world.
I cannot say I managed to read the fan fiction because I never saw the link. But was it in the doc for last week?
No, so we were taking a while getting the last week's episode up, and so I felt bad for our listeners. So I wrote them a little Vacation Tenzin fan fiction about a time when Tenzin, Kaya, and Bumi went to a beach vacation with their parents, and they went to Uncle Zuko's place on Ember Island. And then
oh my God.
Uncle Zuko
yeah.
and Katara were always off somewhere doing something, and Aang was just hanging around with the kids. But they built, like, sandcastles and stuff, and they started mentioning all these little details, and I was like, oh my gosh! I totally didn't watch this episode before I wrote this, I swear! And they said they mentioned Ember Island, and they mentioned all this stuff, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. People are going to think that I watched
Katara
the episode.
Katara and Uncle Zuko's
trips,
though.
No, they did not.
Obviously. Keep that under the rug. But basically, we do discover pretty much straight off, like, they're in the fights that start happening straight away between, you know, Tenzin and Kaya and Bumi, because they're sort of there, you know, hanging around on vacation. Tenzin seems to have a very different memory of his childhood. And he might have been quite young because he was the youngest, so he may not have a super clear memory. He seems to have a very different memory of his childhood than Kaya and Bumi do, because
he's a little bit delusional, I feel like.
He's delusional, yeah. But in a way, it was good to me. In a way, I kind of liked it because it meant that he didn't know he was Aang's favorite, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. He's not like, oh, me and
well,
Dad,
he's the baby.
He was not aware that he was getting treated differently, which is nice in a way, in terms of the relationships with the siblings, because he wasn't like, oh, this is just for me and Dad to do, guys. Like, he wasn't trying to exclude them, but Aang was really terrible. Like,
yeah,
and they say it. Like, what we learn about it is actually way harsher than you ever would have expected them to. Because you can theorize it. You're an adult watching the show, and you can kind of theorize it. But I wouldn't have expected the show to actually tell us that, especially given that this is the hero of the last series.
Know. Yeah, you guys were talking about it last week, and when I was watching this episode, I was like, oh my gosh, they're getting into it. Like, they're going there. Especially, they brought up everything from when they're, like, on the cliffs, and they're talking about, like, benders versus non-benders, and, like, you see them, like, kind of teaming up on each other, which I liked that moment more so than them being like, listen, you were Dad's favorite, and you know it. Like, mm-hmm. We weren't involved in anything. It was just sort of like, eh. You two aren't special enough. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is heartbreaking.
No, but I agree with Natalie. I don't think he did realize that he was Aang's favorite.
Oh, no. Tenzin. Yeah, Tenzin definitely didn't realize it.
Maybe
because
he... But Aang, it seems like, judging from the picture, that he was much younger than both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because they even were saying, like, they're like, his precious baby airbender. So they were clearly old enough to, from the get-go, know...
What was going to
happen.
Maybe Katara didn't want to have more kids, and, you know, and it got to the point where they had two kids and neither of them were airbenders, and Aang was like, come on, like, Katara.
We've got to have more.
You know, and no more kids with Zuko, you got to have one with me now.
Zuko's family line is fine.
Yeah. So, I don't know, it's just much harsher than I ever would have expected them to actually get into on the show. It's 100% as harsh as we theorized, but I can't believe the show actually said it about, you know, the hero of the past show and how terrible he was.
I mean, makes sense considering that he's somebody who's had this much responsibility since he's been 12, and he also never grew up with an actual... family.
Parents.
He never had parents, and he never had siblings or anything, so he doesn't understand that sort of sibling rivalry that I think Katara and Sokka had going on.
Yeah.
So I can definitely see Katara trying to be like the peacemaker and being like, no, we love you all the same. And Aang being like, oh no, Tenzin, we have to go do our job over here. Like, let's go.
Yeah, it's really... But it wasn't even doing a job. It wasn't him teaching him how to be an airbender. It was him taking him to ride the frickin' elephant koi. Okay, trips just to the air temples to be like, we're going to learn about air nomad history because you're going to have to carry
that.
This. I get that. I 100% would have gotten that. And I think that they could have all gone, but, you know, they could have their special little airbender lesson.
They're all Air Nation kids. They're all air nomads or whatever.
Yeah, but just the holidays of, we're going to ride the elephant koi, yay! We're going to go to Ember Island and build sandcastles, yay! Like, that's not stuff. He's not raising the next Avatar or something. Like, he didn't need that much special treatment. Like, and... You know, as I said, I do like that Tenzin doesn't remember that he was being treated differently, that he thought that Kaya and Bumi were okay as well. Like that, but the fact that Aang made those choices is really shitty. Like, it's really bad. So yeah, why didn't Katara do anything to kind of fix this, I suppose? Like, why wasn't she like, hey Aang, you've gotta
I can't imagine
love all
that
of your kids.
Like, being totally serious, Zutara aside, like, totally seriously, I can't imagine that their marriage was always a happy one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't see... I feel like this would really bother Katara a lot, this kind of special treatment to Tenzin.
And especially since she pushes them to go together, and mm-hmm. she can kind of see Tenzin being like Aang, and she's like, no, that's not going to fly anymore.
Yeah, maybe she felt like she couldn't do anything at the time, and now she's like, you guys have got to bond again because of how shitty your father was.
Yeah.
But I don't know, why wouldn't have she been like, you know, Aang was pretty whipped by Katara. Do you think he got like more of an ego as he got to be the adult Avatar? Like,
I think once he started hanging out with Zuko, he was like, whatever, I'm like the Avatar and we're running the world and my wife is back home.
King of the Fire Nation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then his priority shifted from, okay, I need to stop being like playful and fun and happy all the time and need to get to work and create an airbender and also like create world peace. Unlike Korra, who's just like, I need to bend all the time.
Yeah.
And it does seem like Katara was definitely like left at home.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure that did not entirely make her super happy either.
Yeah, and I mean, that was one of the things that Kaya said, like when Dad died, that she packed up her whole life to be with her mother, I guess in the Southern Water Tribe or wherever it is her mum lived. I don't imagine that. Was Katara just banished? Like, why doesn't Katara live on Air Temple Island? Like, where did they raise their kids? Like, why does Katara live in the South
Pole? Maybe they were separated, like a secret separation.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
That would make so much sense because, like, I feel like Katara is, like, badass enough to, like, be, like, have a position, like, in the capital.
Like a council
you know?
Member.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, like, surely they lived in Republic City, you know,
I mean,
maybe.
She does teach healing, I think, because they were saying, like, oh, like, we learn from the best, or, and, like, you know, but...
Or did she go there to live with Korra? Like, did she go there to, like, look after the Avatar? Is it just because that's where the next Avatar was?
Yeah, but Korra, like, had left already by, like, you know, she, like, was kind of...
No.
When Aang died.
Like, we're assuming that she went there when Aang died or whatever, so I don't know. It's weird. It's really a funny family, and yeah, we would have, maybe this is the reason that we haven't got a, like a show about this whole situation, because it would have actually dealt with these issues, if you know what I mean. Like,
that's what I want dealt with.
I want this.
Yeah, but yeah, remember, this is for children, and it can't just be like, oh.
But they can make a spin-off for adults.
Yeah, I wish. Because, yeah, it is really harsh and really true. There's some really sad moments, like, and good. As we said, there's obviously the moments about them giving Bumi a hard time about being a non-bender, which is, like, clearly Aang and Katara didn't really raise them to be non-bender racist or anything like that. They're a little bit, they clearly always still gave him a bit of shit about it or whatever, even though that they grew up with Sokka and that Sokka has done many great things.
He kind of turned into the Sokka, though, didn't he? Because now he's, like, a lead commander or whatever. He did what Sokka did, which is...
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, someone with the power to control air or water has a better chance of jumping off a waterfall and not dying than someone who doesn't have that power. I do accept that objectively that's a thing. But still, it's still pretty harsh. They clearly... It's really true. Like, I live with someone who has an only child, right? I don't know if either of you are only children. I don't think that you are. But my friend who's an only child really seems to struggle. Every time that she sees, like, me and my brother or me and my family and something goes, like, wrong or whatever, basically the way that you always kind of revert back to these childhood, like, childish dynamics that you as a grown adult really shouldn't be acting like, with your siblings, she cannot process that this is a thing that humans do with their family. And I'm like, no, all people do it.
Everybody
when they're with their
does
family.
This.
Yeah. It's really stupid, but we do it. Sorry,
it's
a thing.
So funny. I have a brother who's 2 years younger and a sister who's 6 years younger. And when we're like alone, so if I'm alone with my brother or alone with my sister, we don't fight. But as soon as my parents come in, we start bickering like we're 8 years old again. And it's my parents hate it. But I don't know, like this weird, like competitive thing starts happening.
Yeah, it's true. Like that people really do revert, you know, to these childhood dynamics, like completely irrational stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we still
even
get
when they're 40
out of our
years
table.
Old or whatever.
Like, if
really?
We're like, okay, we
fight.
No, we not even fighting if we laugh too much. We are the youngest is 22 and the oldest is 33. We still get sent away from the table. Like, my nieces and nephews are perfectly well-behaved, and it's the adults who are like, stop it. Just get out of the... You cannot sit here anymore. You have to leave. Like, we are told to go sit somewhere else because the contagious laughter is just, like... It's something stupid. It could be, like, the spoon slides the wrong way, and everyone is in hysterics. But it was been the same since we were little. But we still get punished. Yeah. Like, it's unbelievable.
That's so good. Oh, sorry. Yeah, so those childhood dynamics, I think we can all agree, definitely exist forever. And apparently people who are only children don't really get this. Like, they grow up with their parents and they sort of become adult. They develop an adult relationship with their parents and that's it. Like, apparently that's a thing that happens. Only children. Who knew? Like, so, yeah, it's interesting. But we also learned that, like, Kaya, like, apparently before she had to move in with Katara, she was, like, traveling around the world finding herself. Like, she's, like, a total hippie or something.
Oh, my gosh, guys. I, like, love Kaya so much.
Isn't she sexy and beautiful?
Yes. Like, she's so good. I know you hate Katara, but I really feel like she's the Fire Nation version of Katara. She's just, like, a little bit more chill, always up to go to the beach. She's, like, stylish but still bossy. So,
and voiced by Lisa Edelstein, which I just found out, and I'm so excited.
Oh, no, what? She totally vibes like Lisa Edelstein. Yeah, I think I knew that, but I forgot, but she totally vibes.
I was like, where is this voice coming from? And I was like, oh, yeah, this is so good.
Good times. So I'm just trying to think about all of the conflict moments. There's, yeah, the Bender moment, and then, obviously, there's the moment with Bumi talking to Aang in the temple, which we'll talk about in a moment when we get to our favorite scenes. Yeah. We'll manage to get to that before.
Can we do favorite scenes? Because I have to leave, like right now.
Yeah.
And I'm so mad we spent so much time on Korra's stuff. Thanks, sorry. Mitch. Thanks, Mitch.
Yeah. I'll also say quickly that this episode is, like, the first time I've genuinely liked Ikki, like, that I haven't found her annoying. Like, and I don't know. I love her in this, and I sort of love her low-key version of herself. Like, that it's still her own personality, but, like, anyway. So, yeah, Kaya and Bumi, etc. fight. I think that we're going to talk more about this during the favorite scenes, so we'll go through that quickly. You go first, Ariana, talking about the fight, I suppose, because that is actually a very relevant part to the episode.
Yeah, so I just liked when the gang kids finally fought together, or aired out their, you know, their tension, because, you know, obviously Aang was, like, not a great dad, and that was really interesting to hear, but also to have them, you know, finally say what was on each other's minds and how they all have resentment for different things, either because Bumi feels like he got treated differently because he's not a bender, Kaya feels like she took on all the responsibility after dad died, and Tenzin feels like he has the weight of the world on his shoulders, so.
Yeah, I mean, they're all valid points, when Tenzin's like, I had to carry on the whole tradition of a whole culture, who else was going to do it? And they say exactly what you said. They're like, how about us? We're Aang's kids too. This is our heritage as well, just because we don't wear the yellow clothes, if you know what I mean. So all of that stuff that we've been talking about gets brought up, and it was pretty intense, actually. Brittany, how about you for the first episode?
For the first episode, mine was when they were talking about their vacations as kids, because it aligned with my fanfic in a beautiful moment.
Yeah, fair enough. Quotes from that episode? Mine was right on the opening up scene when we finally get to see Vacation Tenzin, and he's like, ah, I haven't felt this at peace since, and then Bumi, like, is like, wahoo, and jumps off the cliff, and he's like, and it's over. I just love the way that Tenzin mutters to himself, basically. I love him. Ariana, how about you?
Mine was when Kaya was yelling at Bumi, and he's like, I told you those rocks were slippery. You could have killed yourself. And it was just such a Katara thing to say, so that's why I liked it.
Fair enough. And Brittany, how about you?
Mine was when Bolin's talking to Mako, and he gets advice about breaking up with girls, and he's like, thanks, Mako. Phew, I'm so lucky. I'm lucky you're so good at breaking girls' hearts. Korra better watch out. Oh, no. It's just, never mind.
Do you think that the vibe of those conversations is that Mako wants to break up with Korra? Or,
I
like,
think he just doesn't know what to do.
I feel like it's coming.
I hope it's coming. Yeah, like, do you
I hope it's coming.
Jesus. Yeah, it's interesting. So the second part of the episode, my favorite scene was Ikki telling the bison that they were okay. The first, my first favorite scene, sorry, these are sort of attached, was when Pema asks where Ikki is and Milo makes up the story about, like, what happened to her, basically. I don't know why. I found that hilarious. And also the idea of Jinora and Milo as sort of the ones against Ikki, which I wouldn't have necessarily expected. But I like when Tenzin finds Ikki and she's kind of whispering to the bison that Tenzin's okay, like, oh, no, he's nice. And just I just like the way that she talks when she's, like, low-key and not squealing and yelling, but it still has her own personality, basically. I found her very, very sweet. Favorite scenes for you guys, Ariana, from part two?
So mine was, I guess, the picture of the gang babies. That was really cute, but for reals, Brittany's was my favorite. So
Brittany did get the best one. We all wanted this one. So Brittany, let's go. Come on. Break our hearts.
Boomy walks into the temple and you see that he's talking to Aang. And it was the first time in both series where I actually felt emotion. And of course, it came in a Boomy scene, so it was so fitting. And it was the first time, like, it was the only time I've ever really wanted to use tear bending, the tear bending hashtag.
Tear bending.
Because it punches you in the gut. It's out of nowhere.
Just the things that he says is really like, oh, I hope you're proud of me.
Well, Ariana's going to do it. Ariana's going to read her favorite lines.
Oh, you're going to read it out? Yeah, oh, you've got the quote, have you? Okay, so we'll go down to that quickly. Mine was Varric when he was, you know, being like, Julie, where's my tea? And, you know, you forgot the honey. And she says, there's no honey in here. And he says, no honey, we're in a bear, for crying out loud. Like, Varric's logic is just beautiful, and I love him. So, yeah, I just find that hilarious. But Ariana, yes, you've picked the quote of Boomy's sadness. So,
Boomy is talking to Aang, and he goes, hey, Dad, you're looking well. Look, I'm sorry I didn't turn out to be an airbender like you hoped, but I've tried my best to keep the world safe. Hope I've made you proud. I was just like,
who would have thought? Boomy, of all people.
I know.
The sad thing is, you know, Kaya can say as much as she wants, like, I'm sure you did, but I bet Aang didn't give a shit. Like, sorry, but like, I bet Aang actually wasn't just like, oh, it's not as good as airbending. And it's just depressing. Anyway, I'll love you, Boomy. It's fine. Brittany, how about you?
Mine was when they're sitting around with the baby air bison and Tenzin just sits down and he's just like, it's nice to meet you, Blueberry Spice Head.
I really loved how it showed how good Tenzin is with all of his individual children. Like, yes, they're all airbenders, but, like, their personalities, like, that. Because Ikki, before this episode, she is annoying, and you would have kind of been like, oh, like, you know, what do they really have in common? Like, you know, him and Jinora are both very spiritual together and quiet and chill, and, you know, Milo is still a baby. But Ikki, you haven't really seen, like, anyone treating her as herself, and I liked how he gets along with her and treated her as herself. I thought that was really, really nice. Okay. Well, is there any thoughts about the general episode? Do you think we've covered everything with the gang kids in our favourite moments? Because we really obviously did love that whole plot and everyone gets back and kisses and makes up in the end and feels stronger for it. And now they're a family who've gotten past their beef and they're going to hang out some more. So that's nice. We've got some feedback from Twitter, obviously. If you want to leave us feedback for our next episode, you can reach us on rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, Twitter re_watchable, this post on hyperbole.com, the episode post, or our Tumblr rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. You can leave an ask for Brittany to answer or bring to the podcast. And iTunes reviews. iTunes, 5 stars on iTunes helps keeps the podcast alive. If you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will name you her feeble turtle duck and refuse to ever let you go, which is really exciting. I mean, I'd take that. So we've got some tweets and then we've got quite an extensive email, which we'll discuss some points of. Brittany and I, after Ariana has to dash off and have a life. So I'll just go down. We'll go me, Ariana, Brittany through the tweets. And Jelly saying, if Korra's father was going to be the leader of the Northern Water Tribe, does that mean he's distantly related to Princess Yue? I mean, I think so, unless there was like a Game of Thrones style, like, you know, Baratheon taking over from Targaryen rebellion in the last 70 years. I think that they must be descended from Yue's family. And at the end of this episode, we've got people calling, like, Tonrok the chief. So, like, if they, the people who know Unalaq is evil, are recognizing Tonrok as their king. So that means Korra is going to be a princess. Ugh. But,
like, she needs that.
Yeah. She's no UA, but, you know, never mind. So
Susan at Ruri Kaichu, she says, funny how Mitch mentions Korra and being more fire. I noticed that she firebends a lot, like maybe more than waterbending. I don't want her to be a firebender because, I mean, I think that's what all three of us are. And right now I'm not too cool with her, so.
She's not allowed in our little clique, so.
I noticed that she flat out firebended at Unalaq as well. Like, she uses it as a defense instantly. Like, she uses it really quickly. It's the most aggressive, and she uses it, like, as a defense or an attack very quickly, which is a lot. So, yeah. God.
Then we have Gordon at Toonie Chopper Man, who says, Pema, the greatest shipwrecker since that iceberg Aang was frozen and destroyed Sokka and Katara's canoe. # the last bang bender.
Oh my god. Jesus Christ.
That comparison is just, it's beautiful. It's poetic almost, actually.
Yeah. Kelsey Payers, at Kelsey Payers, is also weighing in, saying, I personally enjoy the Pema as a home wrecking whore discussions. I cry with laughter every time this situation is discussed.
I know some people, like, really hate it when we talk about Pema, but I'm not going to stop, so.
I mean, it's the same thing that we kind of had the problem when we were all talking about Katara last
time we
did, like, Avatar, so.
Look, sorry, guys, but we've got to do what we've got to do, and, you know, none of us really want to slut-shame women, but Pema
it's
is clearly
a home. It's not slut-shaming.
Yeah,
it's
no,
robbing. It's stealing.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So carrying on from that, we've also been given a beautiful fan art.
Yes. I think, Brittany, you retweeted this out because then I was crying. but from Andriana Castle, she said, I didn't have an opinion on Pema before, but to fuel the fire, so to speak. And then it's this great picture of Tenzin, like, holding Lin's hand and Pema's hand.
Oh, like, you know, Lim's leading him off into the distance, but he's, like, leaning back to kiss Pema, who he's clearly started an affair with on the side at airbending school. So, yeah, I mean, it's
so
true.
Good.
It's true, yeah. All right, well.
Now I have to go. This was lovely. I'll see
you. All right, we'll see you guys. We'll see you next week or whenever you're next free, Ariana.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, Brittany and I will carry on with this very long email that we have and then see how, you know, how we go with that and what it's about exactly. So,
do you want me to read it? I can read it.
Yeah. Why don't you read it? Because I wasn't sure what it was about, actually.
Okay, so this is an email from Zach Harrison, and it says, Hey, guys, I was so bleeping excited when you guys announced you were going to do Korra. I can hardly begin to describe my love for Legend of Korra, but I'm going to try. It hit me very hard how much I loved the show in the season one finale. I realized how adult it was for a Nickelodeon show and I became obsessed. I remember at one point actually saying, oh my god, and no, 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 out loud in my empty bedroom, something I have never done before. Brike actually went places I never thought they would.
Brian and Mike, the creators of the show, it's a fandom thing.
I'm a newbie.
I don't particularly use that phrasing. I know Michal does a lot. But yeah, they mean the creators. Like how in Glee fandom everyone called them R.I.B.
R.I.B.
You know?
Gotcha.
Yeah,
okay.
it's like that. Yeah.
All right, so Brike actually went places I never thought they would, and watching Korra grow as the season and the series continued was amazing. I love Korra, the character, to death, and would defend her and lift her up at any time. We may need you on the show soon to put some life back into us.
Yeah, we don't, I mean, you know, she's certainly a main character. Oh, like, you know, she's got main character qualities, but at the moment,
I mean,
she's
people keep telling
choices.
Me to get through book two, so I'm just going to get through book two.
Okay.
There's been talk about the artwork and the music on the podcast, so I figured I would add my two cents. In my opinion, the artwork is absolutely gorgeous, and some shots completely blow me away. And there are some pieces that make me have to say that, again, in my opinion, Korra has the best soundtrack I've ever heard. I would add my favorites, but the titles contain the spoilers, so I'll save that for a later date. But there are moments in the Jeremy Zuckerman's music that give me chills to this day, and I think the music greatly improves in book two, so look forward to that. to finish this long-winded and slightly rambling email, I would just like to thank you guys again for the amazing podcast. You guys are so funny and entertaining, and your opinions are all incredibly interesting, even when I disagree. Again, we're really sorry. Just Quora sucks right now. I think you're all awesome, and I can't wait to listen to all the freakouts to come from watching The Legend of Quora. That's all. Finn.
Very nice. So, Ariana's already gone, but that's all from us, I suppose. It's quite a short one today because we blended the two episodes together quite a lot, but that's fine. So, until next time, I suppose, I have been Natalie.
I am and will always be Brittany.
Yeah, maybe one day I won't be Natalie, but who knows? yeah. All right, so bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, now that Natalie's gone, we can talk about Zutara.
Yeah, we can talk about Zutara the rest of the time. Oh, that reminds me, I really have to tweet out all of those photos of Zutara that I have saved on my phone.
She can hear us